First, ensure that we've all silenced our cell phones. Then I'd ask you to please help me welcome Carrie O from Los Angeles as our speaker.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Carrie, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to say thank you so much to the group, to Raquel and to Lena, for the invitation to come up from Santa Monica today, and to Cora for being my host and giving me a lot of great information and making me feel really welcome here. This is actually my third time in this group. I came with my sobriety sister, and my sponsor was here in April, so it's great to be back. I am new to Southern California. I just moved here 2.5 years ago. I've met a lot of people in AA who are like born and raised in Los Angeles, and they asked me what I was doing this weekend, and I knew not to say I was coming to Orchid, no offense, but I knew from being here that, you know, this is like a bedroom community. But anyway, I said I'm going to Santa Maria, and they went, nobody, they had been here. I've been here 3 times. So thank you for that opportunity. I really appreciate it. I want to give a shout out to people in my sponsorship family here on Zoom. Also want to thank the group for continuing to make this message available to people, you know, who can't be here for whatever reason, because of distance or whatever. And I know I've been part of Zoom groups and hybrid groups and groups that are coming back and whatnot, and I know it's hard to keep it going with the Zoom account and all the technical difficulties and everything, so congratulations and thank you for making the effort. I appreciate it, and I'm sure the people who are there appreciate it too. Congratulations to everybody who picked up chips. Welcome to everybody who's new or coming back. I know we have a couple of family members in the room tonight, and welcome to you. You know, this is an open meeting. We have only good news here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, it's great that you're here to support your family member, and they really are in good hands. And if you don't think so after my presentation, just, you know, come to another one, and they're really fine here, no matter what you hear tonight. So my sobriety date is October 21st, 2009. So I'm 13. And I, you know, that's the beginning of the teenage years, and I feel very much like a teenager. I have my birthday is coming up. I'm gonna be 73 in 20 years. So I was 3 weeks shy of my 40th birthday when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 2009. And I looked like a whole grown adult. I had a job, I had a career, I had a house. The 12 and 12 actually talks about people with 2 cars in the garage, and I had 2 cars, not because I was rich, just because I was too lazy to get rid of the first one before I really wanted the second one and blah, blah, blah. But I looked like a whole grown adult, but I was, you know, I was not, and I was not acting like it. And, you know, and what I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous, by applying spiritual principles to a spiritual malady, which I've had my whole entire life, you know, before I ever took a drink, you know, I'm really changing and I'm really transforming into a completely different person. And that takes, you know, for anybody who's new, you know, my experience has been, it takes time. If Alcoholics Anonymous worked as fast as booze, we would be meeting at Yankee Stadium. You know, you could not keep people out of Alcoholics Anonymous if it worked quickly. It doesn't. And so, what I've found in this year is that it's very much like being a teenager again. I've got the basics. I know the reading, the writing, the arithmetic. You know, but I still need a lot of help, but I don't like to ask for it. So, anyway. And I have a niece and nephew who are twins, who are 14. And I like to gauge my spiritual progress, or lack thereof, by how 3 of us are doing. And I'm happy to report that we can all get through a whole afternoon without an emotional meltdown, as long as there are snacks. So I am from a large Irish Catholic family. I was speaking to somebody before the meeting. I'm a member of the CIA. That's Catholic Irish Alcoholic. And I'm one of 5 kids born in 7 years. I'm actually an Irish twin, which means I was born in the same year as my brother. We actually were spaced such that we were in the same grade. So of course everybody thought we were twins. I say all this to say that because my parents are people who really wanted to have kids. And there was a lot of love in our home. My parents were both the children of alcoholic fathers. I learned that way later in life. That was also something they shielded us from and also put a whole continent between the chaos of alcoholism and our family. They were from Boston, and we moved to Stockton, California when I was six. And so I grew up with no exposure to alcoholism, very little exposure to alcohol, and very little exposure to any kind of chaos. However, there was a lot of chaos going on inside my little mind. And I did not feel okay. I was not okay from the beginning. I was in maybe fourth grade, and I went to this elementary school that did not have any walls or any homework. It was like a hippie experimental school that any child would be thrilled and delighted and beg their parents to send them to because it was amazing. But I just did not feel okay there for no particular reason. And I, you know, all these years later, can't find anything wrong with it. Begging my parents to please send me to the Catholic school up the street. That's just how I was. I got drunk for the first time when I was 14. I was on a field trip of one of my brothers. We were on a ship. There was a table for drinks in the sort of bottom of the ship. There were soft drinks for the kids over here, beer and wine for the adults over here. I found myself in the bottom of that ship. One of the good things about being from a big family is that you can find yourself alone and unsupervised a fair amount of the time. I'm not a sports fan, but I know enough to say it's not a man-to-man defense. It's a zone defense in that situation, two parents and five kids. So I found myself alone in that basement of the ship. And I got a red Solo cup, went over to the kids' table, poured some orange soda, noticed there was nobody here, went over there, it was the 80s, White Zinfandel wine, poured that on top of my soda, and then meandered about the ship, having my little wine cooler. And I did not know, and for anybody who's new, this here is our book. And this book, in the very beginning pages, talks about the physical factor of alcoholism and how, you know, what does that mean physically as like a, whatever, the body, medicine, or whatever, to be alcoholic, what does that mean? The way that we talk about it is we talk about having an allergy to alcohol, or we also call it the phenomenon of craving. Meaning, alcohol comes into my body and it creates a craving for more alcohol. And that's the thing that happens to an alcoholic that doesn't happen to a normal drinker. I actually came up here with a friend from LA who was in Europe this summer and came back with a very nice bottle of something I think is called Frangelico. And I have been over to his house approximately 10 times since June 1st when he returned. And do you know that bottle? There's this much gone. It's been 10 weeks, folks. 10 weeks. And it's just sitting there. That's not me. I would take one sip out of that and then that craving would kick in. Anyway, I'm mentioning all this because that's what happened to me at the age of 14 in that ship. And I went back to that orange soda table multiple times, and back to the wine table multiple times, each time pouring less orange soda and more Zinfandel wine. I got nice and toasty drunk, and nobody knows, and nothing happened. And for the next 14 years, I did not really drink that much. I had that phenomenon of craving when I did drink at a bachelorette party, at a wedding, you know, college graduation. Whatever it was, I was definitely drinking to the max. But I did not drink that much. I was extremely obsessed with school. I wanted all the grades. I wanted all the attention. I wanted all the awards. I had dated, I had a Russian boyfriend in college, and he told me that I reminded him of the kids he grew up with in the Young Communist League. that I was just running around the school all the time, you know, trying to be in all the clubs and winning all the awards. That was how this extremely busy head was kept busy for those 14 years. When I drank, I got drugged, that phenomenon of craving kicked in. That was that. But I did not do it that often. Well, my sponsor, Wayne Butler, talks about how alcoholism and this kind of the spiritual malady that I have is like having an electrical plug, and it needs a power source. It needs somewhere to plug into. And what I've come to understand is that for those 14 years, I was plugged into the power that came from school, getting awards and getting attention or whatever. And I have many examples where, for some reason, I was not getting a good grade, I was not getting attention, I did not get an award, and she did, or he did. And complete disaster, unacceptable, freak out, you know, whatever. So I know that that is a good analogy for me. When that power source was on, when that electricity was on, I was okay. When it wasn't, I was not. And so I'm 28 years old. I go to law school. I'm doing the same. Grades, awards, etc., everything. I finish, and there's no more school. Nothing else to do after that. Just work for the rest of your life. And so I was 28 years old, and that power plug, it just went right into alcohol. I made a friend named Mark. He introduced me to hard alcohol. He introduced me to whiskey. He introduced me to whiskey that is put in barrels that have been burned on purpose, and that's bourbon. And he introduced me to Maker's Mark. My parents, I didn't mention, are quite religious. And my mom is somebody who has made pilgrimages to a variety of different sites that are important to Catholics around the world, Medjugorje, some places in Spain, et cetera, et cetera. I made a pilgrimage to Kentucky, to the Maker's Mark. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. My friend Mark introduced me to Maker's Mark, and he poured me a bourbon and ginger ale, and I'm 28 years old, extremely tightly wound, disastrous love life consisting only of made-up relationships, you know, of people that just, you show me the slightest bit of attention, and I'm like roping you into, you know, becoming your wife like in 3 days, and when it doesn't work out, I'm depressed for 6 months, you know, like, extremely conflict, you know, lots of conflict at work of people who, you know, thinking, you know, just, what I've just come to understand is like, I just was extremely hostile to the world. I was hostile. And so everything everyone did seemed hostile to me, even though it wasn't, maybe sometimes 5% of the time, but to me 95% of the time, everything that was coming at me was hostile. And so I just had a lot of conflict in the workplace and just a lot of things to talk about and worry about and everything. So anyway, all of that just plugged right into alcohol. And 28 years old, was really the first time that I got what talks about in our book, that effect produced by alcohol, that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from taking a few drinks. And I gotta tell you that for about the first 3 years, it was amazing. I was relaxed. I had this new friend. Every day, I could just get out there and whatever would happen was gonna happen, because I knew at 6 o'clock, I could start cracking open those having those bourbon and gingers, that red wine, whatever, talk it all over with my friend Mark. And Mark was one of these friends who, I don't know if you've ever had a friend like this, but he agreed with everything. He agreed with me 100% on everything. Everyone I loved, he loved. Who I hated, he hated. And I don't know about you, but my sponsor is not like that at all. My sponsor's always asking extremely rude questions like, what did you do? How did you react? What mistakes did you make? I'm extremely grateful for that help today, because I know that that is the difference between the life I was living before and the life I live today. But at the time, it felt amazing to have a friend like this. And so we used to complain about everybody in our lives and all the things that they had done, and then get really drunk and then basically just go into the next day. Physically weak, we were talking about hangovers before the meeting. Boy, I do not miss those. It's easy to forget after 13 years how great it is to wake up in pretty good physical condition every day. Sometimes I have too many sweets and have a little sweet hangover, but But most of the time, you know, feel pretty good. But that was not the case then. Mentally weaker, physically weaker, and spiritually weaker every single day. So my life just kind of slid slowly at first and then pretty fast. And so after about 3 years of complete amazingness, you know, things took a turn, and I drank for the next 8 years. And during that time, I knew something was wrong with me. I knew something was wrong with me. I knew I was meant for this. And every year around my birthday, things would be worse. My job would be worse. My health would be worse. My relationships would be worse. Things that I had wanted to do in the year, none of that would have happened. So I had these marks, these times of, like, you know, some reflection. And I knew, there was some part of me that knew things were not going well. And then I was trying things. I was seeking solutions, all kinds of solutions. I went to therapy. Then I quit my therapist so I could go on vacation, because vacation was going to be my solution. I love self-help books. I would go to the bookstore sometimes and just read the spines of books, trying to diagnose my problem and then maybe get a solution. Get that book, little checklist, things to do, quizzes, and just really felt good. I got a book called The Anger Trap. That didn't work, so I got the book Anger Trap for Women. If I apply a gendered approach to my situation, maybe it will get better. I got a book on boundaries, several other books, and in 2009, I got a book called Take Back Your Life with Outlook. And it wasn't Take Back Your Life with, like, a sunny outlook on life. It was Take Back Your Life with Microsoft Outlook, which, if you don't work with computers, is... it's basically just an organization and email program. And I'm telling you, when I read that book, I thought, okay, finally, this is it. Like, this, my life is color-coded and organized and whatever. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, I forgot to update, you know, my little computer thing. And, you know, and I was just off and back where I was again. For anybody who's new, so this book... this book looks intimidating, and it's called The Big Book. But in fact, like, the main part of this book is just, it's only this part, like the program of recovery, which we will call the first 164 pages. The rest are stories. You know, it's meant to be like a meeting in print, basically, like somebody, a story like I'm telling, somebody just wrote it, you know, they wrote it down, they put it in this book. I'm mentioning all this because in one of these stories, one of these AA geniuses coined a term called the geographical cure. And what that means is, when I'm not okay with myself, I'm not okay with where I'm at, and I attempt to fix it or cure it by moving myself from one place to another, you know, geographically relocating. And this is very common amongst alcoholics. And I believe in Los Angeles, I don't know about Santa Barbara County, but in Los Angeles, I believe I am winning the geographic contest, because in 2005, I decided that I was living in Washington, D.C. I decided that was too much, too workaholic, too much stress, and I needed to get out, and I moved to Armenia. And my experience with geographic cures is they actually do work for about the first 30 days before I took it and about the first 30 days after. The anticipation, the preparation, the closing out of old projects, the opening of new ones, I felt great. I did not drink that much. I started to exercise a little bit. I was good. I got there. The air was warm. The tomatoes were delicious. It was a completely different environment. All was good. And then on about day 31, I look around. I see a lot of dirt. I am working there, and the people that I'm working with are just about as annoying as the people I work with back in DC. Also do not know how to work the printer at the office. And it begins again, the nitpicking, the dissatisfaction, the focusing on the negative. And that's all fine and good. Day 31, I signed a year contract. So, the middle of that, I'm, you know, having this grand foreign adventure, stuck to my couch, binge watching American DVDs, complaining about the Armenians full time. I had Armenians on my fourth step, which, for people who are new, that's where we list our resentments. I also had the Armenians on my eighth step for all the harm I caused for when I came back to the United States. I'm literally, you know how we say, you may be the only big book that anyone ever sees? I was the only person, you know, the only experience of Armenia that anyone has seen, and I'm just trashing these poor people left and right for my own, you know, my own hostility towards the world. Anyway, so my eighth step is never to speak poorly of the Armenians. So please do not ask me about it after the meeting. you're helping me. I came back, dove back in to my life, my work, my complaining about everything with Mark, and you know, and things just got worse and worse and worse. I was looking for solutions. Very rarely did I consider alcohol as some part of my problem. Now remember, I'm somebody who did not really drink until I was 28 years old. So I'm a late bloomer by all stretches of the imagination. And I'm going to bars, you know, I'm a weeknight bar drinker. I do not like drinking on Fridays and Saturdays. Too many amateurs, too much difficulty. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and even Sunday at the bar, amazing. And that's what I was doing. And yeah, I just did not think it was a problem because I was so, remember, I'm so tightly wound and so focused on school and all this stuff that it's like, I deserve it. This is just my time. And so very rarely am I looking at alcohol, but one time I did stop drinking for a couple of days. I think I had to make a presentation. My hands were shaking. And I thought, I probably have Parkinson's. So I consulted my higher power, which was the internet, and went looking for, you know, what could this possibly be. I ruled out Parkinson's, and I was extremely disappointed. Much rather have a fatal, you know, whatever, fatal degenerative neurological disorder than, you know, maybe an alcohol problem. But I kind of eventually made my way over to the part of the internet that had to do with alcohol abuse. Never AA. I did not darken the door of AA.org, no. But maybe I was on WebMD or something. Anyway, it was there that I first found, and again, remember, I come from a family where there's two alcoholic grandfathers 3,000 miles away. Very rarely are stories told. They're always put in a good light, but every now and then a story will come out like, oh, one time your grandfather came home at 2 a.m, I was 12, he woke me up out of my bed and said, make me a sandwich. So that was, to me, that was what alcoholism was like that sort of whatever. And so I really had no idea. I didn't know about the phenomenon of craving. I didn't know about the allergy to alcohol. Obviously, you know, as an Irish person, first of all, but, you know, but then with sort of the genetics coming in on both sides. And for anybody who's new, you know, I'm no doctor, nor a geneticist, although I play one on TV. My understanding is like there can be a genetic component, but if there isn't, you can still be alcoholic. So anyway, I really had no idea what it was. And there in WebMD, it says something similar to what it says in our book, is that the key to about the difference between alcoholic and non-alcoholic is whether it can be controlled, whether drinking can be controlled. And I honestly had never tried that, because remember, I'm 14 years, basically an extreme periodic, you know, with long periods between drinking and then getting drunk. And then I've got, you know, I'm going on, I'm at 10, you know, 9 or 10 years at this point of drinking whenever the heck I want to, wherever the heck I want to, whatever the heck I want to. Remember, I'm already a lawyer. I already have a career. I already have money. I already live by myself. I already am never getting in a relationship, and I'm never having kids, so nothing is getting in my way. And that was just how I rolled. And so I really had no idea, and I had never tried to control my drinking. So after reading this, then I saw, okay, what does it mean to control? Like, what even is, like, moderate drinking? I don't know. So I go to the U.S. government website, and it says for women, first of all, unfair, sexist, why does it have to be a different rule for women and men? But it says for women, 3 drinks a day. Now, to me, this is one. However, 3 of this is not enough. So I went to the UK website. Again, I'm Irish. That's right next to the UK. I'm not skinny. So maybe the three drinks is to save the skinny small girls. Anyway, UK website says 5.
So I thought, okay,
5 of this, we're in the ballpark. I can dial it back a bit to 5 of these. That's fine. And that was my goal. Now, I want to tell you, I probably don't even have to tell you. I blew past that goal. I never thought about that goal. I didn't think about it for another year and a half. I just kept on my merry way, doing exactly what I was doing, making absolutely no changes. Year and a half later, again, you know, I'm starting to add psychiatric symptoms every year. I become what I call depressed. I become anxious. My throat starts to close. I'm having physical symptoms of anxiety. And again, now I'm working as a lawyer, again, looking like a whole grown adult in business meetings with business people doing business things, bringing an entire bag of hard candy in plastic wrappers because my throat is so dry all the time. I'm opening these things in a meeting, making a huge amount of noise, opening the entire bag, what is that, 50 candies, through a 1-hour meeting, creating a giant pile of plastic things. Just thinking to myself, I have a medical condition, this is my medical condition, and this is what I need to do to treat it. So even if for 1 minute I thought this is unprofessional, I'm hurting myself, I'm being rude to the people around me, no, I don't care, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm treating myself. And then I even became claustrophobic. Could not wear a seatbelt. I went to see, just to sort of put you in the time frame, the movie, I went to see the movie Milk, Sean Penn. I went with somebody, I think it was the winter, so I had a big coat. I think I was in Baltimore. Anyway, just like could not even sit there. I went 10 minutes into the movie. I have to go out. Fortunately, it was one of those old inner city movie theaters that they've renovated and put a bar in it. So, but I left everything, my purse, everything, but I had $5 in my little coat, in my little sweater or whatever. And I was like, you know, man to man to the bartender, please, I have more money than this, but let's get started with this $5 that I have and, you know, get going. Anyway, I sat out there, I think it's kind of a long movie. And I just sat there at the bar for whatever, 2 more hours. And again, and I've really come to understand that for me, all of these things are absolutely related to my alcoholism. These are all, for me, symptoms of a spiritual malady, of a problem of my spirit. And the way I know that is because in Alcoholics Anonymous, applying a spiritual solution, that is all 100% cleared up. Cleared up, gone, almost immediately upon kind of accepting AA and moving forward. That's my experience. So anyway, that's where I'm at. Depressed, anxious, claustrophobic. Started re-looking at alcohol again in April of 2009. I go on the internet again, and I find a program called Moderation Management. And Moderation Management says that if I apply cognitive behavioral techniques, which sounded like science to me, that I could drink moderately. Now, the moderation management people is actually made up of like a lot of alcoholics. So they tell you what one is. One is like this, like 3 ounces of, I don't even know. It's completely unjust. 3 ounces of wine, I don't even know. What is an ounce even? Like who speaks in ounces? Anyway, but they tell you. And so I decide to do step one of that program, which is just count your drinks for 30 days. Don't change anything you're doing, just count. So I had this would have been 2009. I had a fake BlackBerry with the little keyboard. Remember those? I was dating a bartender, so I was at the bar all the time. And I would go in the bathroom, and I was faithful, and I would count my drinks every 30 days. I have a little post-it note that I keep on my refrigerator with like little hash marks. It was a lot, it was whatever. It was way more than 5, even like this. And anyway, but that's what I did for 30 days. Then I did nothing again until August. And again, I'm amassing up more and more things. My anger is becoming a huge problem. What I've come to understand is that, you know, I'm somebody who had two problems. I had the problem of overreacting, but I had a problem of underreacting as well. I had a problem of not taking action when I was supposed to. I got a lot of responsibility at work, a lot of people, a lot of money that I was in charge of. I loved that, by the way. But I was a very, very bad steward of especially the people that were sort of in my group. And I underreacted. I failed to take action for people who weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing, as I should have. And so when somebody would make some small mistake, or in my view, didn't have some piece of paper that they should have, I would overreact. And just, you know, fast forwarding a little bit, thank goodness for people for whom that is a problem, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have tools for that. And like both of those things have gotten even out for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm getting ahead of myself. And so I was on probation at my job for my outbursts, my inappropriate behavior, my yelling. Might have used the F word from time to time. Again, feeling completely justified because somebody had been bothering me for months and I didn't say or do anything about it. And they really were, you know, they were not doing what they were supposed to be doing. But then I would take a moment, you know, at a small thing and then overreact. Anyway, I'm on probation for my emotions during the day. And I was never drunk during the day, never, not once. Which also, for anyone who's new, it's really important to remember that alcohol, we say, is but a symptom. And, you know, removing alcohol is key because it certainly gets in the way of a normal life. But treating this, in my case, racing mind, spiritual malady that I came here with is absolutely essential if I am to stay away from alcohol as a way to treat my problems. So that's kind of, you know, somewhat of a summary of what we're doing here. So that's where I'm at. I am now also morbidly obese. Like I said, I'm a weeknight bar drinker. I don't know about the phenomenon of craving. I don't know when I slam that first Yingling. Do we have that in the West Coast? Do you guys know what that is? It's a brown beer. It's from Pennsylvania. Anyway, I would slam that 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night. I have no idea. I have set in motion a thing in my body, that phenomenon of craving, that I am just going to keep drinking until something else happens, like I pass out or, you know, it runs out or whatever. I have no idea. I go to the bar, have all my bourbons and gingers, maybe half a bottle of wine from the bar, etc. I come home, I keep on drinking. I'm alone, nothing new is gonna happen, but I keep on drinking. I order a pizza, I'm completely drunk, lost control of all my limbs. I spill the pizza all over myself. And so I'm morbidly obese, and all my shirts have pizza stains on them. And I don't get new ones. Again, I have the money, but I don't get new ones because any minute I'm gonna get my act together, I'm gonna lose a bunch of weight, and then I will go get some new clothes. So this is how I'm rolling. And I mean, I'm talking, this is like 3 years maybe this is going on. Again, and I'm a lawyer. I'm walking into my meetings, my big meetings, and my this and my that. I'm going on TV with these pizza stained shirts. I have one suit at my office that I throw on when I'm about to do something. You know, I'm always, and I, you know, I'm bloated. I go from my bed to my desk in 30 minutes, and it's a 20-minute drive. I keep things extremely simple. I'm never looking good. My hair is 1 inch short all the way around, keeping it simple. I wear men's hair products. It's really stiff, you know, like a pomade kind of situation. My hair, it just doesn't move or go anywhere. That is just how I'm rolling. And again, I am not one of these people who was like, and I thought I was doing fine. No, I knew. I knew I was not doing fine. But, you know, another thing I've learned here is I was doing the best that I could. And for anybody who's new, anybody coming back, maybe from relapse, I just believe that is the truth of everybody all the time, that we are really doing the best that we can. The bad news about Alcoholics Anonymous is we got this book full of information about how to do better. And once you know it, do what my sponsor says, know better, do better. And that's a blessing, but it's a curse too, because there's no hiding, you know, once I know. But I encourage you, if you're new, get into this book with somebody because it has so many great instructions. Once the information is here, and if I have the power to apply it, which is kind of what the 11th step talks about, right? We have that we ask, we're not asking for things. I don't, you know, please God, give me a car. Please God, send me a boyfriend. No, send me the power to know what your will is and the power to carry it out. And like, that's just been my experience, and I get that. I'm getting ahead again. Anyway, so there I am, 2009. Depressed, anxious, claustrophobic, morbidly obese. My knees stopped working. My first sponsor used to do an impression of me coming down the stairs at the clubhouse that we used to go to. I would go one at a time, you know, let everybody go first, let everybody know how I'm doing, and I'm doing terribly, and then go one step down and groan on each step. That's how I was. That's what I was capable of. August 2009, I do step two of moderation management. Step two of moderation management is don't drink for 30 days and think about why you drink. Now, I had no idea that that was actually one of the most dangerous things I've done in my life. I've driven drunk, I've stayed overnight in the hotel room of 70-year-old bus drivers because it was a free room. I was completely drunk in Ireland. I have done extremely reckless and dangerous things, really my entire life, drunk and sober. However, I really believe nothing was more dangerous than what I did that day of removing alcohol without substituting it for something else. And now, mind you, I'm drinking for 11 years at this point. I was not a late stage alcoholic. I was not in the DTs. I was not physically dependent on alcohol. Some people are. After a certain amount of time, I think smaller people maybe get dependent more quickly. Non-Irish people maybe get dependent more quickly. I spent a lot of time in Russia as well, so I feel those are part of my genes and my makeup, that I'm Irish and Russian, you know. Anyway, I was not. In fact, when I stopped drinking, I had a slightly uncomfortable home detox. Some people need to be medically detoxed. Our books talks about it. We favor hospitalization for those who need it. I didn't need any of that. However, it still was extremely dangerous. Why? Because I was treating all my problems all those years with alcohol, and I just took it away and I didn't put anything in place except for moderation management, which says drink grape juice out of wine glasses as a substitute. I went to the supermarket with my friend Terry Penny. We spent $300 on liquid alone and walked home. That is a lot of liquid. We spent an entire afternoon making I had lots of stemware. I had all the martini glasses, the highballs, the lowballs, the mid-century modern. I had it all. We got it all out. We mixed pear juice with sparkling water. We did mocktails all day long. That was my solution for alcoholism at 3 days sober without a program. It did not take long before this like mass of slight craziness coming out from time to time, just the lid came off, and it was insanity. I went on a date with somebody, they didn't want to go out a second time. I was prone on a bench outside my office, crying to my therapist, calling my girlfriends all over the country. Just again, for someone who is a complete overreactor, I'm like overreacting to everything. And I know something is extra wrong here. And fortunately, somebody who I had just screamed at was a master's of social work. And she was the one who said, alcohol and emotions maybe go together. And you've just removed the alcohol. Your emotions are all over the place. You might want to go do something about that. And I was grateful for the information, honestly. I really had no idea. I remember, my education of alcoholism is people who wake you up in the morning at 2 o'clock and tell you to make a sandwich, and I never did that. So that's all I know about alcoholism. And to the parents and to the supporters who are here, thank you for being here, because you are getting an education, hopefully, in alcoholism. And again, no shade to my parents, but they are people who, they knew they didn't want to be like that. They did whatever they did, leaned into their faith, and they were not like that. They were fabulous and amazing. And they don't have, they're amazing. But they did not seek any further understanding of alcoholism and what it was, besides people who wake you up at 2 o'clock in the morning. So for those of you who are here, good for you, because I think it's important for everybody to have a good understanding of what it is that we're dealing with here. Anyway, off the soapbox. Back to the story. Um, I said, okay, I have a therapist, but I'm going to go see a different therapist because now I have some sort of alcohol problem. I look through what's available. I'm living in Washington, D.C. The most prestigious university in Washington, D.C. is Georgetown. So that's where I'm going to go. I call up, we don't have any appointments for 3 to 4 weeks, number one. Number two, we do not accept your insurance whatsoever at all. You are going to pay cash, and it's going to be $250. Now, fortunately for me, I'm an incredible snob. And so this information does not discourage me, it encourages me. This woman is so good, she's at the prestigious university. She's so good, she doesn't even need to take my insurance. I will find that $250, I will go see her. And thank goodness for all of this. Because when I went to see her, and for those people who are new, we have a principle in Alcoholics Anonymous called cooperation with the professional community. We have committees that people do this. We really want to have good relationships with doctors, with therapists, with psychologists, with psychiatrists. It's been a principle of Alcoholics Anonymous from the very, very beginning. And thank goodness for that. Because this woman had an entire array. Now, this is 2009. This isn't 1935, where there's not a treatment center on every corner. And this is, again, this is no shade to treatment. This is just my experience. She had every possible option to send me to. Her own little groups that she was running where she could have been making money off of me. Who knows what else? She could have sent me over there. She made one suggestion and one suggestion only. And remember, I'm totally bought in because of how prestigious I think she is. And she said, I suggest you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did go that night. And she suggested a 6 p.m. meeting to me. I went home, I took a nap, missed that. Went onto the website and found a 7 o'clock meeting. I went to that meeting. It was at a church that had 23 doors. And the directory said that the meeting was in the back. Well, there were two backs to this church. I went to the back, the wrong back, and then I went to I was actually early, about like maybe 10 minutes, and I went to every single door, none of which were open, until I got to the 23rd door, and that was where the meeting was. I was a little bit late, walked in. This meeting was a small meeting. It was full of men. There was maybe one woman, and she was not a group member. Again, I'm 3 weeks shy of my 40th birthday. These guys were 25, 19, and 18. They were enthusiastic members of Alcoholics Anonymous who knew that they were at their work site, that God was their supervisor, and God was their employer. They were the foreman of this work site, and I was a customer who had just walked in. And that's exactly how they treated me. They did not pass me off to the meeting down the street where all the women who drank wine out of brown bags were. They did not try to pass me off to another woman. They were ready to speak the language of the heart. Alcoholic to alcoholic. This is something I'm extremely passionate about. And I'm so grateful to those guys for what they did that night. They were a group that went to fellowship after every single meeting, no matter what, no matter if there was a newcomer or not. That was just what they did. So it was extremely natural to invite me, and I have no idea why I went, but I did. On the way over to the meeting, I'm walking next to this guy, Adam. He's barely 18 years old. He's like 7,000 feet tall. And he says, you know, my whole life I felt like I didn't fit in, like I didn't belong, and I wasn't a part of. And I'm sitting there thinking about moderation management, because we've got step three here coming up in moderation management. Step three of moderation management says, slowly introduce alcohol back into your life and see what you can handle. Now, I told you I'm turning 40 in 3 weeks. I have spent the entire summer planning my party. I've rented a bar called Bar Rouge. I've got a $2,000 budget, $1,000 for food, $1,000 for booze. That is the correct ratio, if you are wondering. So I'm thinking, maybe that party would be a good time to reintroduce alcohol into my life. I'll be surrounded by friends and family. Could not be a more safe and secure environment. So this is what's going through my head. And now this kid, is talking about these feelings that I've had my entire life. not feeling a part of, not feeling okay. So I'm like a little dog seeing a squirrel. Okay, I'm gonna listen, I'm gonna pay attention, and I'm gonna keep these two options open for a little while and see what you hear have to say in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm actually quite interested in a solution for that feeling. And then I read the steps, and that last step says, you know, having had a spiritual awakening. I have no idea what that is. I have no idea what a spirit is. I'm an atheist and a proud one. I have no idea what that is, but it's in the neighborhood, it's in the ballpark of maybe what I'm looking for and what I couldn't even imagine would be possible. And so that kept me interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. And our book says, don't shy away from spiritual terms. Don't freak people out, but don't shy away from spiritual terms either. And these guys didn't, and thank goodness. I went away, again, it was almost my 40th birthday. I was with my three friends, Terry, Janet, and Lori. We went to a lake cabin. They bought me a really nice bottle of champagne. I was not ready to give that up. So I took the one friend aside. I said, I stopped drinking temporarily, so can you just hold on to this champagne bottle, please? Can't get rid of it, but just you watch over it. I bought a big book at my meeting. One of the guys at the meeting who became my sponsor said, read the doctor's opinion. Those are the first pages of the book. Another guy at the meeting named Aaron, he had 3 days sober. He said, you and me, we're high bottom cases. Which means we haven't lost everything. We're not homeless. That's what you and me are. It is true. There's stories in the middle here that are called, they stopped in time. That's what Aaron told me to do. Who do you think I listened to? The guy with 8 years or the new guy? I listened to the new guy. So there I am reading the stories. They stopped in time. I cannot stop thinking about this bottle of champagne. I cannot stop thinking. I don't really even like champagne. I don't like opening it, but I cannot stop thinking about it. And I think I don't have a problem because I haven't had a drink now by this time in 72 days by the time I've gotten to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm thinking this is not a big issue. But it's a big issue right now, 1 a.m. at this cabin by a lake. Eventually I said, okay, I'm going to go out there into that refrigerator. I'm gonna get that champagne, I'm gonna go outside, and I'm gonna throw it in the lake, and then I'll be done. And just the thought of that was enough for me to go to sleep and move on. I didn't actually do it, but I thought it. Next day, this is 2 days after I did the AA meeting, one of those guys called me. Again, they knew that they had a live one and a window of opportunity that could close at any minute, and so again, they did not pass me off to anybody else. They took me on as their case, and they called me to see how I was doing. I was shocked. I thought we would see each other once a week like my therapist. Anyway, I'm telling this guy, he's speaking the language of the heart to me about his problems, his anger, the way he put his fist through walls, all these things, and it like opens up, and I'm telling him everything about the bartender that I'm dating, how we've broken up 3 times already, we're getting back together again. The being on probation, my hair is falling out, my knees don't work, I'm supposed to get an MRI, but I cannot sit still, even on 2 Xanax. I cannot live life. And I tell him about the champagne and how I wanted to throw it in the lake. And he says, you know, normal people don't have to throw champagne into a lake in order not to drink it. And by definition, I told him about moderation management too. He said, and by definition, anything that you have to control is already out of control. Relaxed, got through that day. Came back, I asked him to be my sponsor. We got busy working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We got to that first step, my sponsor says, do you know what is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker? I'm like, no, I read this whole thing, I don't know what it is. I'm sitting there thinking, I never really gave moderation management a try. I never did that third step. I never slowly introduced alcohol back into my life. He rudely interrupts me and says, okay, so what's the answer? I said, I don't know. He says, it's right here. He says, the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is that they will one day be able to control and enjoy their drinking. I was like, is this like hidden camera or something? Like how, you know, like, how do you know that that's what I'm thinking about? But I'm also thinking, you know what? I am not going to be a yes man in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not going to just go along with whatever you're saying. So I spoke up. I spoke up that day, everybody. I spoke up to my sponsor. And I said, well, you know, I never really did give moderation management a try. Do you know what he said? And it's right in his book. He said, go ahead and try it. Step over to the nearest bar room, it says in our book, that we can tell people that. A therapist would never tell you that. But my sponsor told me that day. I was so shocked. I was like, I don't think he can speak to me like this. I would like to see a manager. But instead, I just filed it away as, there is something different going on here. This is something different than all these places I've been before. Church, therapy, Armenia, all the self-help books. There's something different going on here, and it kept my attention enough to keep on moving. We got through steps 2 and 3. Again, I'm an atheist. Thank God for the 12 and 12. Thank God my sponsor was well-versed in the 12 and 12. It's very clear what to do with an atheist. If you are one, if you sponsor one, it's all in there in step 2, and my sponsor just did it exactly. Resign from the debating society. Use the group. Use AA as your higher power for as long as you want or need to. That was fine. Good enough. I'm over it. Let's move on. Step 4, all my resentments. Ha! Seriously, I gotta write down what everybody has done to me my entire life on pieces of paper, and then you are going to listen to it? This is amazing! I love step 4. And now, I read ahead. I didn't read ahead in moderation management, by the way. What moderation management says is moderate is 2 to 3 drinks, plan for 7 in a 24-hour period, plan for 7 to 10 days in advance. What about when nobody in the office knows how to fix the printer? And it's Tuesday, and I wasn't going to drink, but now this major disaster has happened in the workplace where the printer does not work, and none of these idiots know how to fix it. I need to drink that day. Moderation management is not going to work on that. I cannot plan for that 7 to 10 days in advance. I don't know when people are going to just be complete idiots. I don't know. So that was what moderation management was talking about. Again, I did not read ahead. Same with 4-step. I don't read ahead. Eventually, my sponsor tells me the very bad news, and sorry for delivering it to anyone who's new, is that eventually I'm going to look at all those people that I put on my list and look at my own mistakes. And what did I do to those people? I did do that. It was hard, but I did do it. I was fearless and thorough. I can really say that. Moved on. Told that to my sponsor on the 5th step. My sponsor incorporated 6 and 7 into what I was doing at that time. I actually felt willing to make amends. I really was a little bit sick of myself. I really did digest huge chunks of truth about myself, and I could start to see that I was the problem. I could start to see that thing I was telling you about earlier about anger, about how I'm an underreactor, and I don't step up when I'm supposed to, and I don't take the roles that I am supposed to. You know, in step 3, it talks about how we are like the actor trying to direct everything. My sponsor says, yeah, quit directing, but remember, but you're the actor, so act. Don't forget that part. Act. And that was what I needed to do in so many areas of my life, both romance, with family, and in the workplace. I needed to quit underreacting, and then I stopped overreacting, just as one example. And so I was willing to make amends. Now, some of those amends in the workplace I had already made. It was a requirement for me to keep my job, and part of the union complaints that were filed against me, that official apologies would be made, both in person and in writing. So I told my sponsor, I already apologized for that, for those things. And he told me, I am quite sure that you did not do it the AA way. And I had to concede that is correct because, like, you know, I was doing it literally to save my job. And I really thought everyone was being ridiculous. And I thought they were overreacting. So I went back to this woman, brought up the incident, said I was wrong. I thought, she's going to be like, this is no big deal. You know, you already apologized. And plus there was that email, which was extremely satisfying. No. You know, I caused a lot of harm. People looked up to me, and I trashed them and stomped on their hearts and their emotions. And her eyes welled up. And she's a gracious person, as most people are. Not everybody, the book talks about it. Some people will throw you out of your office, and that's okay too. We're all good. The most important thing is that we take the action, that I take the action. And I did that, and she was one of, thankfully, the gracious ones who said thank you. I appreciate that. And the thing is that that first apology was completely useless because I wasn't any different. It was just a matter of time before I exploded like that again. Just a matter of time. So I did all that with my family, drove up and down the East Coast making amends. My sponsor asked me if I was willing to fly to Armenia to make amends, and I said I was, and he said I could do them over the phone. And remember, one of my amends is not to talk badly about the Armenians, so please don't ask me about that. And then got going on steps 10, 11, and 12, which I've been doing every day for the last 12 and a half years. Inventory every night. I told you about how I used to get together with Mark and just complain about everybody. Today, I look at myself. What did I do? What could I have done differently? Was I selfish? Was I dishonest? Was I inconsiderate? And I do that. Meditation in the morning, absolutely, absolutely helpful for taking this volcanic person and turning her into like a little bit more of a pussycat, just a little bit. And then being of service and helping others. My sponsor says that sponsorship is like sandpaper on my own character defects. When I help people who are angry, they get on my nerves. Just calm down. You know, why so angry? But it's just because that's how I am. And when I see it in other people, and again, I really mean it, like, what are you so angry about? It makes me think, okay, yeah, that's right. You know, and then I have my little flare-ups from time to time, and it's like, okay, yeah, what am I so angry about? So, through this vigorous course of action, through this way of life, this AA way of life, which we've been so fortunate to have on this planet for 80 years, my life has been transformed. In 13 years, one day at a time, again, slowly, those things, those problems that I talked to you about have gone, you know, are gone away or are going away slowly. I told you my knees weren't working and I needed to get an MRI. I need to sit still for 20 minutes. I could not do it. This is not my head. This is my knee. Like, that's what they need. I could not do it. My sponsor said, I'll come with you. Again, another moment where I was like, I don't know what we're doing here. He was a lawyer, busy. He's gonna take time out of his day to come to my MRI appointment. There's something going on here. I sat still for 20 minutes. I got my knees fixed. Started exercising, started changing the way that I eat, having some control, having some discipline. We are undisciplined people. We let God discipline us in the way we have outlined the steps. This is not Weight Watchers, but if I want to do something about my problems, I can seek out help and solutions and then actually carry them out. So that's what's happened. I've gotten my job and my career and my reputation back. I was 5 years sober. I got a job that required a presidential appointment. I kept that job for the entire length of that presidency, which was only 2 more years, but you know, what can you do? No complaints in that job, new friends from that job. Was able to start my own business 6 years ago. That enabled me to move from the East Coast to the West Coast. I basically work part-time now for a full-time salary. I have a really sweet life, 100% everything because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to tell you a little bit about my friend Mark. We drank drink for years. Best friends, did everything together. Traveled together, Monday nights together, Tuesday nights together, stupid, breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything. Super interesting, amazing person to hang out with. We matched each other drink for drink. When I got sober, our friendship was on pretty shaky grounds. Did not know how central alcohol was to our relationship, but through Alcoholics Anonymous, I got the tools to healthily and safely transition that relationship from extreme best friends to acquaintances who used to be really close. I went to his wedding. We were close, but we're not hanging out all the time. During the pandemic, he called me, told me that he was in rehab. He also told me, they told him there's 14 ways to get sober, and AA is one of them, and he's going to try the other 13. And I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous to mind my own business and not to offer help to people who aren't asking for help. And so I did that. And a few months later, I saw on Facebook him posting himself with a rum and a Coke and everything. And I, you know, whatever. I knew, I know. And 5 months later, I got a call from his husband that he was in the hospital, kidney failure, liver failure. And a week later, he was dead, 50 years old. It was for me, it's just a reminder that maybe there are 14 ways to get sober. For me, there is one way, and there has been one way, and it's Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm gonna close up with this on the 12th step. I went on a cruise this summer with Terry, Lori, and Janet, the three girls that I went to the New Hampshire cabin with the champagne incident when I was, ultimately, what turned out to be 2 days sober. I always skip over this part. I had been drinking O'Doul's all that time. I found out that actually has alcohol in it, so I reset my sobriety date, and I did not have 72 days when I came to AA. I had zero. But anyway, just in July, I went on a cruise with these friends to Greece. If you've been on a cruise, it's so amazing. They have this little booklet that they put out every day, and they put in their friends at Bill W. can meet at 4 o'clock in the library. That's how important we are to the world, that on a cruise ship, they need us to kind of keep a lid on it, you know? And they need us, it's like it's, we're at sea, you know? We can't just be ourselves at sea as alcoholics. We need to keep a lid on it. Anyway, I go to the library at 4 o'clock, one guy there, 63 years old, New York accent, living in Florida. I know the type. My grand sponsor got sober in Boston. Now he lives in Florida, more than 50 years sober, met Bill Wilson. I know the whole shtick. We are gonna have a good time on this cruise. We're gonna meet 2 to 3 times maybe. This will be great. I got my old timer on this cruise. This is amazing. Nope, 14 days sober. First time in Alcoholics Anonymous, almost drank the night before. But just like those guys at that first meeting, I knew God is my employer. This is my work site. Apparently, I'm the supervisor today. There was nobody else there. There was no 63-year-old man. There was no ex-cop. There was nobody from New York. There was nobody from Florida. It was me. And thankfully, I got good training in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, from everything that has happened over the last 13 years. And I met with him every day. And there were many times that I wanted to take my girlfriends and throw them overboard. But I got help from that man that day, and I didn't do any of those things. I made it through that cruise without throwing my girlfriends overboard, without drinking, and without ruining these sweet relationships that I've had for more than 30 years with these girlfriends. Alcoholics Anonymous is a true way of life that really works in all conditions. The only condition is that we must do it thoroughly. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. If you're new, I highly encourage you to get a sponsor, get a home group, this looks like an amazing one, and begin to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Amazing things will come to pass for you and countless others. Thank you again for the invitation.
Thank you so much, Karen. Let's give her another